Hi, everybody. Thanks so much for listening to our interview with writer Samantha Herman. It was so much fun to talk with her. We actually recorded this interview in September in anticipation of the Fall Harvest movie, Love Under the Olive Tree, which didn't end up airing, ended up getting canceled. We don't know if we'll get it next year. We don't know what will happen, but she is also the writer for Sense and Sensibility and Snowman, one of the writers. And so we thought that would be a good place to use this interview. We did talk about it some and some of her other projects from previous years. So I hope you enjoyed the interview, but that's why there was sort of a lot of talk about the fall movie. So thanks so much and enjoy. Hi, everybody. Welcome to the Hallmarkies podcast. We're so excited today to have another interview with one of our Hallmark writers. We love talking to the writers of the Hallmark films. And we have Samantha Herman today on the podcast. This is really exciting. And I'm Rachel. And Samantha, thanks so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having me. Hi, everyone. I'm Samantha, writer, producer, and lawyer. And excited and enthusiastic Hallmark viewer and participant. So thanks for having me on.
Yeah. So we usually ask our guests to introduce themselves and tell us what inspired you to become a writer or an actress or whatever it might be. But you've done quite a few things, as you say, worn quite a few hats. So why don't you tell us a little bit about sort of your career journey, what you've done?
Sure. So they all, you know, orbit the same entertainment landscape. I always wanted to be a writer, but I didn't know how to do that or if it was going to be viable. So I went to law school to have a little something practical under my belt. And so I've been doing both of those things for a while now. I do entertainment, law, and business affairs consulting. And the first movie that I wrote with my brother while we were both in law school, different schools, but at the same time, because we were scholarly and I needed a little bit more flavor in my life. So we wrote a comedy together that we eventually self-produced called Let's Rap. That was my first script that exists to be seen. And that's how the ball got rolling on that. And so I came to LA with nothing, didn't know anybody, had no job, broke the bar past year and ended up working in a law firm. It wasn't really for me. And I'll cut to the highlights of it. But long story short, I ended up working on a couple short films, doing the business affairs and the paperwork, just as a friend. I got my feet wet doing that. And ended up just hitting it off with that team. And then they were in Toronto, which is my home city. And with them, I produced that movie, Let's Rap, a bunch of other short films, music videos. And I still work with them on some projects. So that kind of got me into the entertainment scene a little bit more, but I was still doing the law, and what I really wanted to be doing was the creative. So my first Hallmark thing, I don't know if you want me to get right into that.
Well, but let's talk a little about some of that. So you decided to go to law school as a kind of a practical backup of what you were going to do. And I mean, that's pretty impressive because I feel like most people who go to law school for those reasons don't make it through, aren't able to finish, especially passing the bar. That's very, very impressive.
Well, thank you. I liked law. I don't have not abandoned it totally. So I still have that as part of my life. I work on contracts. So it's still the written word, which is my passion. Just happens to be legalese sometimes.
Yeah. So I was going to ask how that experience has helped you in your career. Do you feel like it's been useful?
It's totally been useful because when I'm doing the producing stuff, so I produced two features last year, that I did not write. One's called Robbery. It's getting a theatrical run in Toronto next week, 2 weeks from now, October 4th. What day is it right now? And another called The Bellman, which is just in post-production right now. So a lot of my tasks were legally related. I was doing a lot of the paperwork and like business admin of it. So I got to be able to combine that knowledge and that experience with the creative being on set and tapping into the creative decision making. So it was a good sense. So it's totally been useful in that way. I don't have representation right now, so it's useful. I'm my own lawyer, So that's good. And sometimes I just toss in lawyer characters for fun.
Very good. Well, because usually lawyers are very suspect. I mean, if you're a lawyer in horror movies, it's not good.
Terrible people.
Yeah, I mean, unless maybe on the mystery shows you have a better. I don't know, but yeah.
True. So,
were you always kind of writing as a kid, and you just kind of had a dream of being a writer?
I did, but I think I was too shy to really fully embrace it. In fact, I just ran into last week my arts high school teacher, because I was in Toronto for the film festival, and I saw her in line for a movie, and I was nervous to approach her because she'd been impactful, but I was always too shy to really say what I wanted to do. But I took all these arts classes and was immersing in it, but I didn't want to share any of my work or even say what my dreams were. And I said, well, I did approach her. She remembered me. It was a little bit awkward, but she was very kind. And I said, I wish I'd been more outgoing because I was basically a mute and so shy. And she's like, I know, I remember. And that was very embarrassing.
So. I remember that you were
yeah.
socially
and
awkward.
I won't date myself, but it's been a while since I was there. So, yeah.
That's <funny.
laughs> So in answer to your question, I always wanted to do this, but I didn't feel comfortable really getting out there with it. So law school also helped with that too, because it forced me, you know, they call on you in class. So yeah. It forced me to get over my shyness.
That makes sense. Yeah. I can relate because I always thought it would be the coolest job ever to be a film critic, but I never thought that that could happen for me. I didn't even like consciously register it as a career option. Like it was just like, it's not like I was saying, oh, I'm not good enough for it. I didn't even like, it wasn't even a thought that came through my head that, oh, I could go and do that. I don't know if that makes sense.
Oh, that's a thing I can pursue. Yeah, I get it. What?
And so when I started doing reviews on my other channel, just for fun, it was, and on my blog, you know, it was just for that, just for fun. And when they added me to Rotten Tomatoes, it was just kind of like, what is happening? I can't believe.
That's so cool.
What is going on? And
that's amazing.
And so then it wasn't until this year that I really started seriously kind of trying to make a plan and trying to say, well, maybe I could really do this. Maybe I could. What's happening? I don't know.
Yeah. So do you force yourself to see films that you wouldn't normally want to see?
Definitely.
Just because you want to review them. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I still have movies that I'm not really that big into horror. That's sort of I've been trying to push myself a little bit, but
I'm the same. We have the same taste. Anyway, go on.
But no, I've been trying to push myself a little bit in there, but right now I feel like I don't have to push myself super hard if I'm not, there's no organization that's paying me or hiring me. If somebody wants to hire me to review It Chapter 2, then I'll go see it and watch it. But otherwise, I'll pass on that one. But
I did see that the other day. But yeah, it was not my normal speed. Yeah.
Yeah.
I caught up. I watched the first one like a week ago.
I'll push myself, but a 3-hour horror movie to a first movie that I didn't see, I'll pass on that one. But I have been trying to push myself. Yep. A little bit, you know, out of my comfort zone, because I want to have a good, well-rounded Rotten Tomatoes profile, you know, that covers a lot of
things. Yeah, and sometimes it's fun to see stuff that's bad.
Yeah, no, that's true. And I mean, I usually see around, not including TV movies, but around 200 releases in the year. So we'll see how I do this year. I forget what I'm at, but did you see anything good at TIFF when you were there?
I saw 13 movies and I felt so horrible because I plan all the schedule for my family. I'm in charge of our group schedule. And I did so much research. I didn't plan to see any of like the hot tickets because they're going to come out anyway. And then, you know, so I didn't see Joker or the Mr. Rogers, none of those hot ones. But I like put in so much research and I thought I had well-reasoned selections. And I had, it turns out that there were so many duds and I felt so bad. And the two best movies that I saw on my own without the group. I felt really bad, but they were Sound of Metal, which is Riz Ahmed playing a rock drummer who loses his hearing and just like dealing with the aftermath of that change in his life. Very powerful. And then actually a horror movie, which I normally would not go to see, but it was called The Vigil. Yiddish and English language horror movie. Super unusual and amazing.
Yeah. I have the same things sometimes happen at Sundance because I've been regular attendance of Sundance Film Festival for the last 4 years. And I try to research, but sometimes I'll end up seeing something just because it's in the same building and I don't have time to get to another building. Or so I'm like, well, I'll go see this. Why not? And I'm like, well, that was not a good use of 2 hours. Why did I do that?
But, well, at least we're seeing film there. We'll have to link up if we both go this year, but I've seen in, I think, 5 total Sundances, 2 or 3 films total.
Oh my gosh.
Terrible. So yeah. Like, why am I going? Yeah.
You're just doing pure press, huh? Or
just, well, you know, I didn't even say it on purpose, but it's actually like a natural segue because the way I got into Hallmark was from socializing at Sundance.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Yeah. See, I go to the Salt Lake part of Sundance. I don't usually get up there to, cause I get the Salt Lake City pass, which is cheaper.
Gotcha.
But yeah, so I don't usually get a lot of that Park City stuff, but maybe I should. Maybe I'm missing out on all these connections.
Yeah, you got to.
Yeah, I guess. But yeah, no, I do love Sundance, and there are usually quite a few gems that I got to see The Farewell. There's a really great documentary called Maiden that I loved about the first all women's sailing team in the race around the world. It's
cool.
So well done. You got to see it. And I really liked a movie called The Report with Adam Driver that's going to come out this fall. That was as close to sort of a Mr. Smith Goes to Washington kind of a movie that I've seen in a long time. It was just like,
oh, cool. That Dan seems Jones. Like a strange choice for him. So I'm excited.
Yeah. Dan Jones, the hero. Woo-hoo! It was great. but anyway, yeah. So those festival experiences can be very interesting. That's for sure. And I'm excited because October 15th is coming up sooner, and that's when I'll be able to get my local pass. So people want to make sure to put that on their calendar for Sundance if they're looking.
It's already almost October. My God.
I know, crazy.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called PI, People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level. The who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
But anyway, so before we get into Hallmark, you told me through email that you are a big reality TV fan, and particularly these shows like Survivor and Big Brother.
Big time.
Yes. And so that's how my co-host Amber and I met, was through being fans of Survivor, and particularly this podcast, because Rob has a podcast that we both love. And I don't know Big Brother as well, but what is it that you like about these kind of shows?
I like the drama. I like the competition, but I don't Bachelor. No slight on it. It's just not my cup of tea because they don't do any challenges.
Right.
So I'm in it for that. I'm in it for the strategy of the alliances. And also they go a little bit nutty, and I like that. You fight about nothing, and I find that very humorous.
Mm-hmm.
Especially in Big Brother, because they are, you know, locked away with no simulation for so long.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've seen a couple.
Yeah, I'm in it for the competition.
But Big Brother is such a time commitment. It's, I mean.
Yeah, but it's over the summer, so all the other shows are off.
Yeah. But
I'm not just into the reality. I'm into all sorts of TV. So I've got my, going to do my homework this week of what's starting next week. And Survivor's back, I think, next week.
I know. I was not a fan of last season of Survivor. I just felt like that season was such a betrayal of, like, the whole concept of the show. The idea
I agree.
That,
and then the guy who won, he was not even in the show.
And it's not even that, like, he deserved to win. He was playing within the rules of that game. I don't have a problem.
Yes.
I have a problem with them setting up those rules. The whole...
Yeah, they don't begrudge him.
Yeah, the whole point of the show is supposed to be somebody who is first of all, getting by with very little and is strategically playing the game, but strategically playing the social game where they beat out everybody else. And yeah, you can make a claim that he did that, but the problem is that we didn't see any of it. So they have a
9% agree.
They have a perfect game. The game is perfect and they ruined it. It made me so mad. And I was just like, how can you have, like, it's one thing to have Redemption Island and it's not like that's the best, but at least they had to do something. They had game to play. Like, they did something on Redemption Island, right? This is just them sitting on this island.
And it went for so long.
Bad.
Like, at least, like, wrap that up with still a few weeks ago. No, it went, like, basically to the end.
Yeah, and not only that, but they give him, he basically gets an idol right when he comes out. I was furious, and I just felt like it betrayed everything that made the game interesting and exciting, and it just in the service of a gimmick. And the fact they're bringing it back just makes me sick. And
are they bringing it back this season?
Not this season, but next season when they're going to have
all
winners, they're going to bring back the which just makes me so frustrated. And you know, I just think that why on earth would we want to spend a season following people whose games are basically like don't matter at all, and then following a bunch of people who are just sitting on an island, like they're not doing anything. And
I'm with you, but let me ask you though, are you still gonna watch? I am, even despite everything. I can't quit.
I don't know, because I am going to be so busy with all of these Hallmark movies, but and all these podcasts, but I probably won't be able to resist just because I love the podcast. I love Rob as a podcast so much. but it just makes me sad because they had something perfect. They just got so in love with all of these gimmicks that they forgot that the reason why people like the show is because of the strategy for the most part. There's plenty other places where you can watch pretty people in bikinis, and you can, you know, all the other, the reason why you watch Survivor is because of seeing all of these people trying to play the game while also being themselves. And that's what makes it interesting. And that's why every single winner is different in the way that they win, because that's why they just took away the game theory of it, which makes me really
annoyed. They did. They did. I don't care for the gimmicks. Big Brother's gimmicks too. Like where America votes in. Like I don't care what America thinks about the show. Just let them do their thing and play.
Yeah.
And I don't like that they've now made fire making a definitive thing in the end, in the finale.
Yeah.
I don't care for that. You have to earn your vote or not earn your vote.
I know, it's true. And it made me sad too that just like these people who you'd think would know better would give the prize to somebody who had played almost no strategy of the game. Like I was very disappointed in that too, that they would allow their personal connections with a person. I mean, I guess there's something about game theory there, I guess, but it just was fundamentally flawed because we didn't get to see it.
I agree. We get some very wonky jury who don't vote.
It's an edited television show. I mean, at least Big Brother is live, so it would make a little more sense. But
yeah, Strawberg has a luxury. They can show all the best juice. Yeah, you get some juries that are like so bitter, and like that's why Russell has never won.
Right. Yeah. Ugh, makes me crazy. I was so mad with that finale. I was furious. So,
me too.
So sorry.
We have a flashback to it now.
This has become a Survivor podcast, but I never really expressed to hardly to anybody how angry that made me, because it's something I love, and I feel like they just trampled it and ruined it, and maybe, but.
Well, anytime, if you want to message me to discuss, okay. I'm available.
All right, that'll be good.
I'm passion for it.
But I do love Sandra and Boston Rob. I love them. So this whole mentors thing could be fun, but I'm not in a trusting spot with Survivor at the moment.
Yeah, go with like limited expectations this time and hope for the best.
Yeah. So anyway, we'd like to take a second and thank our sponsor for this episode of the podcast. They are the good folks over at Glamour Jewelry Box. And right now you can save $5 on your first month subscription. Go to glamourjewelrybox.com and use offer code Hallmarkies during checkout. And what Glamour Jewelry Box does is every month they will send you a bracelet, a necklace, and a pair of earrings. And they try to be on trend, but not like weird on trend. And so if you want to finish off that holiday ensemble, the holiday outfit with like the perfect accessories, this is such a fun way to have something that is unique, that's affordable, and that not everybody is going to have at your get-togethers and your parties, you know, things like that. Also makes a wonderful gift, because who doesn't like getting something fun in the mail every month? So definitely check it out. Save $5 on your first month subscription. You go to glamourjewelrybox.com, use offer code Hallmarkies during checkout. Mark, let's look. So,
oh yeah.
Were you a big fan of Hallmark movies? Was something you watched growing up or that you, kind of movies?
Majorly.
Yeah.
I watched them all the time for years. We didn't have Hallmark Channel in Canada, but it would be, you know, licensed to other channels. Uh-huh. And when I moved to the U.S., I called a cable company and I said, and this is fully true, like years before I was working with them, this is when I moved to Chicago for school, I said, I need the basic cable package that has Hallmark. Whatever that tier is, that's what I need.
Yeah.
And so I finally had it. And that was 10 plus years ago. In answer to your question in a long-winded way, yes, I've been watching them forever. I didn't fall into this by accident.
Uh-huh.
True enthusiast.
Yeah. So you're just making your connections and stuff at Sundance and you're like, oh my gosh, you do Hallmark movies? I love Hallmark movies.
Not even on purpose. This was completely fortuitous. Yeah.
Right. Yeah.
So I had written what became Mingle All the Way. It was called something else at the time on spec because I had like a little bit of interest. I thought from a production company, but like as things do, you know, the trail went cold, but I wrote it anyway. And with Hallmark in mind as the platform for it. But I really didn't know what to do with it. I was just bidding on this thing. And then Sundance 2017, I guess, I was at a party and Jen Lilly was there by chance. And I knew of her from Days of Our Lives because I'm also a daytime enthusiast. I'm an enthusiast of a lot of different styles of programming, but So I recognized her from that, and I knew because I'd seen her in the ads that she had just done a Hallmark movie that was set to air soon after.
Uh-huh.
And just by luck of the draw, my friend that I was traveling with knew the friend that she was traveling with. And so we all just ended up in a conversation. And I introduced myself and just fully as a small talk item, not with any agenda, because I didn't have an agenda really. I just mentioned that I had written this thing, and she asked if she could read it. And I, of course, said yes. I didn't know if she actually would, but she did. And she liked it, and then she shepherded it to her connections there, producers, and eventually to the execs.
Yeah.
And, you know, took some time, but they acquired it, and then we reworked it internally until it became Single All the Way, and she was the EP and leading lady.
That is really cool. We love Jen Lilly on the podcast. So she's been on our podcast twice, and she's just the best. So add another.
She changed my life.
Yeah, add another positive to her long list.
Yeah.
I mean, just the work that she does just in adoption and in her other charities, and not to mention her making adorable movies that we love. So she's just great. And that's really cool that you got to
amazing.
Meet her and that she was as nice as we all imagine.
Totally. And like a lot of those conversations, and not through malice or any bad intention, uh-huh. but you meet a lot of people at these things, and sometimes sure. just the trail goes cold and nothing comes of it. And that's just pretty common. So I didn't know what to expect. And to not only have her, you know, read it from A to Z, actually like did something about it. And, you know, she's now going to be in one of my Christmas ones that's starting to film soon. So all full circle.
Yeah. Mingle All the Way, let's talk about it. So this app that gets people their plus one for like work parties and stuff like that. First of all, how did you come up with that idea? And would you sign up for this app if it existed?
Totally. That's how I came up with the idea, because I wanted it.
Yeah.
I got a lot of stuff on my own, and I don't mind, but it would be nice to have someone with like, not no strings in like a gross way, but just like to accompany me, to have someone hold my purse if I need it.
Yeah.
And then vice versa, I could go to their thing. So I came up with the idea through true selfishness.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I would be the first to sign up.
I think it's an interesting idea because I don't know. I thought about one of my friends, when she got married, she insisted that all of us her single friends, we all had to bring a date. And at first I thought that's weird because they don't know this person that's getting married. Like that's sort of awkward. You know, who am I going to get? And I was just not into the idea, but she insisted. And I was like, okay, fine. So I brought a date. And so I had a plus one, and it was way better. Cause I had somebody to dance with whenever I wasn't just sitting there bored, like I'm at most weddings, and you know, you just had somebody to talk to. So I'm like, this is interesting. This idea of just not having, just for the sort of the companionship of these events that would otherwise be so boring. I think it's
totally, it's just to have a partner in crime to navigate the conversations, and then to not have to worry about flirting or have them like you back or any of those like true dating anxieties. That's like a separate thing. That's a separate ad.
I think the harder part is when it gets, and obviously you kind of have to do this in order to make a narrative work, but the harder part would be an app that was like setting up kind of multiple plus ones with the same person. Kind of a thing, because I don't know, that would be a little bit weirder, I think, like because you're not supposed to be in a relationship with this person, but like you're going plus one on many different activities with them. It would start to get a little weird, I think if it was just got this company party or this thing that I have to go to a wedding then you have a natural plus one.
I think it
would be interesting. But so yeah, what about the sort of the rest of the, so you had the idea of the app and then kind of built the story around the app, or how did it all kind of come about?
Oh, so long ago. I think I had the idea for the app first and who the female would be, who Molly would be. Uh-huh. And then I just started figuring out like who would be her match on that in a way where it could unfold in the course of the movie and what their obstacles would be. So I put in family stuff, I put in his work stuff, but it from my first draft to what aired did change a lot. So I'm trying to remember like what my genesis ideas were that actually ended up on the screen. Mostly it was the app and the two leads. That's what sucked from beginning to end.
We were so excited because it was like a showcase of Hallmarkies podcast, because it had Jen Lilly, who we've interviewed twice. It had Sandy Sadu, Casey Manderson, and Ava Grace Cooper, who we had all interviewed.
Got them all.
I know. It was very exciting. And you must have been excited when you found out Lindsay Wagner was going to be in your movie. I would have been.
I lost it. I visited the set on the days when she was there.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. Like, there's a picture that exists of us. Yeah, but it was on her phone and she didn't send it to me. So it exists, but I don't have it.
Oh.
That's very sad.
If you're listening.
Lindsay, if you're listening, send me.
The photo. She was just at Salt Lake FanX, the Comic-Con, basically here. Her and Lee Majors where it did a panel, and they're so cool. They're just like the coolest people ever. So it's exciting.
Yeah, that was exciting. And then she was really nice, and we were looking at a scene that she was doing together, and I just couldn't believe that was happening to me.
Yeah. Well, and I really liked the little side romance, like I said, between Casey Manderson and Sandy Sadu's characters. That, like, the little office sort of romance going on there. That was so cute.
Oh, thank you. My favorite thing to do are the secondary love stories. Maybe I'll write a new one called, the Bee Romance.
Yeah. Well, it just adds like a layer, another layer to the, to enjoy the movie on, that you got like your main romance, but oh, look, there's this little side thing that's super fun. Yeah. So.
Yeah, it's my jam.
Very cool. Okay. So then you also had Small Town Christmas. So was this an original script or a rewrite?
That was a rewrite. So it was already kind of underway when I came on board. So it was a different kind of challenge, but really fun. It was a quick turnaround, and I think it turned out. But I was given, the core premise and the core material to work with. So it was a totally different style.
Yeah. So this one about this sort of this writer who comes back to the sort of the hometown and the town that inspired, that she'd written about based on the stories that this guy would tell her. She comes back, and I mean, could you kind of connect with it as a writer, writing, or was it more challenging kind of writing about a writer?
I think I connected to it. So I won't jump ahead too much, but one of my Christmas ones this year is also about the publishing world. So I guess I'm just into that scene. So I didn't create the idea of it in Small Town, but I was happy to work on it because I like the writer's mindset. So it did help that they were creative people, both leads, and I'm nerdy about books and film. So that was fun.
Yeah. Well, I really like the ending of that movie with them in them outside, by the car, and them kind of, I thought the whole ending kiss in that movie was really nice, the way it was done. And there is some heart there because, he ended up raising his niece. And that's the reason why he had left. And obviously that's really, really sad. But I know, so there was a little bit of heart to the story, which is probably why it was on the, I think it was on the Movies and Mysteries.
Yeah, it was on the HMM. Yeah, it was. So the mandate for that is like a little less comedy, exactly what you said, just a little bit more heartfelt. Yeah. And my signature move across the board seems to be killing all the parents of everyone, every generation.
You need to work for Disney.
It's like not uncommon. Yeah. Homework, but yeah, that's my thing.
You're like Disney animators, kill all the parents,
yeah.
Get rid of them.
Yep,
especially the mothers, they're gone.
Oh yeah,
that's cool. Yeah, I know that Christopher Plough really tried to sort of be Jimmy Stewart in that movie, even his voice and different things. So was that sort of what you were thinking when you wrote it? Were you kind of thinking It's a Wonderful Life, kind of Jimmy Stewart?
I wasn't totally thinking it. I just met him a couple months ago when he asked me the same thing. And I said, you did an amazing performance and you like totally elevated what my vision was. So the character was, you know, obviously drawn in my mind, but the way his nuance and his choices were his own, totally. And I thought it made it so much better.
Yeah, yeah. It was good. I enjoyed it too. I thought it was really sweet, and I loved the bookstore, there how he has everything organized by these crazy categories.
Yeah, I love the way that like the designer did an amazing job. That looks so good. I didn't visit that one unfortunately, but I liked what I saw.
Yeah, for sure. That's cool. So the reason why I had originally contacted you was because of the Fall Harvest movie, Love Under the Olive Tree, but we are in kind of limbo as of this recording on the 17th of September about what's going on with this movie, but let's talk about it anyway, because sure. It'll show up on Hallmark at some point in time.
All in good time, yeah.
So... Love Under the Olive Tree. So was this a original or was this a rewrite?
It was an original script with a story by a team. So I was contacted, oddly enough. So I'm telling you, all these like strange networking things,
yeah.
Like nothing in my career has ever happened through what seems to be traditional or normal.
Mm-hmm. I've heard so many stories like this and people that are able to build their portfolio through things like this in Hollywood I don't think it's maybe as unusual as we all would think.
Yeah, I guess there is no traditional or normal anymore, but for this one I was contacted on private message on Instagram by a guy named Antonio. I didn't know him. I know him well now. And he said, hey, do you write Hallmark movies? And I thought in my head, who are you? But I wrote him back and it was not a like nothing conversation. He was an executive producer on it. He hired me on it. And you know, after it wasn't like I was hired off Instagram, but we started the conversation and he chose me and the network said it was okay to choose me. And so what I received for that one was about a page in like prose paragraph form.
Uh-huh.
The core story. And well, you haven't seen it, so I won't spoil it, but that it's about two competing olive oil ranches and that it culminates in the festival, and just the two main characters. So that's what I was given, and then I had to take it from there. But there was something concrete already off the ground.
So was it kind of sort of a Romeo and Juliet kind of, like, battling families of olive oil?
Yeah, totally that. Yeah, that was an inspiration. And also, I don't know if anyone on your show will know this show or watch the show, but Dallas was one of my favorite shows in the 80s with, you know, Jerry Ewing. So they were competing, not olive oil, just regular oil families. So those are my two inspirations, Romeo and Juliet and Dallas.
Good. That's good. Yeah, so kind of similar to have you seen the Hallmark, The Autumn in the Vineyard? Have you seen that one? That one's pretty good.
I'm sure I have. Was that Was that a Rachel Lee Cook?
Yeah. Yeah, the sequels.
I just watched it the other day. Yeah, because I have a backlog on my DVR. That was really good.
The sequel's not my favorite, but the original was a lot of fun. With these, you know, kids of these two winery families, they end up having this house that they have to share, and they literally like divide the house into with like masking tape or whatever. And that was I thought a pretty fun. Hallmark movie. So it's in that same kind of vein a little bit.
That's
what I'm getting. So Tori Anderson is part of one of the Olive Oil people, and Ben Hollingsworth is the other. Is that right?
Yeah. So their respective grandfathers originally had one ranch together that fractured years ago. Rivalry continues, and now they're two separate ranches, and the kids grew up together but couldn't really be friends. I don't want to say too much, but they couldn't, you know, it was a taboo for them to be friends with each other because of the older generations.
Yeah, that sounds fun. I hope we get to see it very soon.
So the reason they come together on this one is that there's a border controversy on where the land, which, you know, a parcel which family doesn't belong to, and so that's the spark of the rivalry, the re-spark of the rivalry.
Yeah, and there's some kind of competition, olive oil competition or festival, of course.
Yep. So I went to Ojai to do some field research at one of their olive oil places, which was really fun. I love field research.
That's always seemed like that would be the most fun thing about Hallmark movies is getting to see the fake festivals that they put on. slash contests or whatever. I think that would be, I just saw here in Utah that they just had an announcement for the, for a fall harvest festival. And I was like, oh my gosh, I have to go. This is so exciting.
Totally. Well, I went to visit this set, and I happened to be there on one of the big festival days, and it looked so good, and they did such a good job that I said, oh, should I buy one of those olive oil bottles as like a token memento? And then they were like, are you crazy? And I said, what? I want one. And they like showed me. It was just like grocery store stuff that had been dolled up for the movie. They did such a great job. I was fooled. And I was looking straight at it.
That's funny. Yeah, so it's kind of cool because it has two Hallmark veterans, I guess you might say. But Ben Hollingsworth hasn't been in one since 2015, so that's kind of exciting. And I'm not sure how long it's been since Sean Roberts has been in one, but I feel like it's been a while.
I think Ben has a Christmas one this season too, or when something. Mm-hmm. I think he has another one percolating. I'm not sure.
Yeah, I guess he was in Mismatched, Sean Roberts, not in 2016, but he was in one of my all-time favorite Hallmark movies called Recipe for Love with Daniel Panabaker.
Oh yeah, I've seen that one.
It's so good. That whole scene where they're baking bread is, I kind of joke that it's the Hallmark version of the ghost pottery
scene.
Pottery.
Yep.
Like, we need more like that. Hallmark movies, come on. I do like a little, I like when we get an early kiss. It doesn't happen that often, but just like a little bit more intimacy. I mean, I'm not asking for PG-13 here, folks. I just, it's a little more. I mean, because, I don't know, because it makes the story more interesting because then they have to deal with that. It's not just this near kiss where
I know. I watched one the other day. Well, the name's now going to escape me, but it had a festival and a hot air balloon, fear of heights, maybe it'll ring a bell. It'll come to me. But there were like a couple of kisses along the way. I was very surprised.
I think I was the mime one and
excited.
That's exactly it.
Yes.
Because then they have to deal with it and then it makes it interesting and their characters grow and it just like defies believability most of the time, these near kisses, because especially when it's something that can be very easily ignored, like any sensible human would ignore like a little sound or a phone ringing. Are you kidding me? Like, if Ryan Pavey is trying to kiss me and there's my phone rings, I'm not answering the phone. Like, this is.
Yeah, what phone?
Yeah, right. What phone? Anyway, but yeah, Recipe for Love is one of the best. I absolutely love it. I mean, and it's just got really good characters, and it's really good.
I'll have to rewatch that one.
Yes. We'd like to take a second to thank our second sponsor for this episode of the podcast. They are at Skylight Frame, and right now you can get $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame, and you go to skylightframe.com. That's SKYLIGHTFRAME. And you enter code Hallmark, not Hallmarkies, just Hallmark, and you can get $10 off. And what this is really neat about is that's such an easy way to display photos in a new format, because we've had digital frames for a long time, but this is a completely digital experience. You don't have to have your frame connected to the computer at all. People can email photos right directly to your frame. So what could be so fun about this is you could be looking at your frame and surprise photo from a member of your family could just pop up. And I think that's such a delightful idea. You think of all the pictures that we take on Instagram and on our phones. And if you could just one click send that directly to the frame of a member of your family, that would just be such a novel, fun concept, I think. They are very attractive. It's a black frame with a white mat. It looks just like any other picture frame, so it doesn't look like a digital frame that we've seen before. It has 100% satisfaction guarantee. You'll really enjoy it. And I think it would just make such a nice gift, especially if you think of somebody like a grandma or somebody that's really important to the whole family, and that everybody could be sending photos to the frame. It has a touch screen. It's just easy to use. And you can save $10 off your purchase of a Skylight Frame. You go to skylightframe.com, enter code Hallmark. That's Skylight Frame, SKYLIGHTFRAME. .com code Hallmark. but yeah, I mean, it has a really good cast. We love Karen Holness. She's in it. And yep. So I hope we get to see it soon. And Peter DeLuise directing. He's
yes, very exciting. He threw me into my little cameo. So look out for a very awkward woman clapping in one of the scenes. That's me.
Yeah.
I was happy to do it, but I'm not a natural on-screen talent.
Were your other movies, did you get to go on set, or was this your first one to be on set?
I went to Mingle and Olive Tree, but okay. Not the other one.
Good. Cool. That's good. So you have multiple Christmas movies coming out. Is that correct?
Yes, I've got two in the 2019 block. One is Sensibility and Snowmen. Okay. So that one's already complete.
Yeah.
That's an Aaron Krakow, Luke McFarlane.
Yeah, I want to talk to you about this. Leads. So.
All right. Lay it on me.
Okay. Well, so Hallmark's track record with Jane Austen homages, I would say, I wouldn't even call them adaptations, has not been the best. I did not like either of the Pride and Prejudice last year. And so I'm a little nervous about this one, although the cast is undeniably charming. So what
I think the movie turned out real, or I haven't seen the movie, but I think it turned out really well. But as far as like hewing to the actual book, not so much.
Okay.
So, you know, I have limited expectations for like true book adaptation. I mean, it's the two sisters, so still that is the trope. But otherwise it's kind of its own thing.
Okay.
And, but I think you'll like it still. I'm just happy with how it turned out, and I think it's going to be a fun one.
Okay. Well, I guess I just, cause the thing about Pride, Prejudice and Mistletoe last year is the whole movie was just them planning this party. There was almost no conflict at all. It was just, I was like, there's nothing about this movie that's Pride and Prejudice. But even aside from that, it was just, I don't know, I thought it was so dull. It just didn't
do,
Yeah, it just wasn't my favorite. And I just feel like if you're going to make a Darcy character, like, the last person in a million years I would think of as a Darcy character is Lacey Chabert. Like, Lacey Chabert is all sweetness and kindness, and like, what? Like, she's not somebody that I, and so because of that, they couldn't really make her Darcy-ish at all. And therefore, no. She wasn't. It was just in the name. And it was just them planning this party for 2 hours. I did not like it.
So this one's about a party planning too. But I feel like you're going to like it.
Okay.
As long as you are okay with it not being a fully faithful Sense and Sensibility.
Okay. Fair enough. I can deal with that. Okay, and like I said, the cast is undeniably charming with Aaron and Luke, and I feel like there were other people I saw online that are...
Kimberly Sussat is
yes,
second sister,
right.
And Jason McKinnon is her partner in crime.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, when they told me the cast, I was really excited.
Uh-huh. That's cool. Very good. And so then what is your other Christmas movie that you are doing?
The other one is Angel Falls, A Novel Holiday. So that is the follow-up to Christmas in Angel Falls.
That's right. So is this going to be about is it more of a spinoff, or is it?
It's the same town, new lead.
Okay. So, so we're not going to see Rachel Boston or
not this one.
So this is just in the same universe, but different characters.
Yeah, and Beau Bridges will carry over as the Angel.
Oh, okay, good. Because I loved Christmas in Angel Falls. I thought it was so good.
Yeah, that was a good one.
Yeah. So, I loved the chemistry between Paul Green and Rachel Boston. That was great. And that's some pretty early kisses in that one. That kiss in the church was the best. Absolutely loved that. and I loved the whole idea of free will, and just, I don't know, it was so good. It kind of reminded me of the preacher's wife / bishop's wife, depending on which version you like, story. And how did you kind of go about trying to kind of make the sequel and making it your own
This one had a lot of freedom to it. I just had to be situated where it was situated and have, you know, the angel component. But this one, it's different because I don't want to like reveal too much, but neither of the romantic leads are an angel. So it's a totally different dynamic.
Oh, okay.
They're both
totally
just
different
people.
Oh, good. Okay. So poor Angel Falls. It's still in need of divine intervention.
Yes.
That's good.
Yes. So I've got to... different, I don't want to call them sad, different people who need to be revived with their Christmas spirit.
Yeah. Good. Well, I'm really excited for that. That's for sure. What we like to do to end off our interviews is we do some silly questions.
All right.
Yes. Because we were just talking about Christmas movies, I'm going to give you the Christmas version of our silly questions. So here we go. What is your favorite holiday drink?
Eggnog.
Okay, good. All right. What is your favorite cookie or treat? Holiday cookie or treat?
Oh, all of them, but I'll say... Is shortbread, does that count?
Sure.
Is that holiday-y? Okay, I'll go with that.
Yeah, definitely. Okay, what is your favorite Christmas song or carol?
Mariah Carey's
Just
All I Want
general.
For Christmas Is You. Is that what it's called? Yeah. I mean, it's so basic, but it's so good.
It
and
is
also
really,
the
really
one
good.
The one from the Peanuts that I can never remember the name of.
The one from who?
The Peanuts, Christmas Time This Year.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know if that's the name, but that one. That's my jam.
That's really good. Okay. What is your favorite Christmas movie?
Home Alone.
Oh, I love Home Alone. Yeah, Home Alone's a formative movie for me. I saw it when I was 9 years old, and it was the first comedy that I ever really, really liked.
I watch it every year. Both of them love it.
So good. Good choice. Okay. What is your favorite holiday tradition to do every year?
Now, I'm going to give you a confession. I'm Jewish. Uh-huh. So my Christmas celebrations are mostly by watching Hallmark movies.
Okay. Good. It could be a Jewish holiday, just whatever holiday tradition you like.
Well, I did celebrate Christmas growing up, and we would do the cookies and milk for Santa. Uh-huh. I'll go with that.
Okay, good. All right. What is a memorable holiday gift that you've either given or received?
I took my mom to New York for a gift and took her on a Broadway tour. That's her favorite thing. So it was more an experience than a, tangible. Uh-huh.
That's the best kind, I think.
I think,
definitely the best kind. What shows did you guys see?
We saw The Prom, Hadestown, Network, To Kill a Mockingbird. This is recent.
Just barely. Jealous. Yep. Oh, I would love to see Hadestown so much.
That's amazing.
Oh, so good. I mean, just the album I loved, and what I saw from, the clips and stuff, it looked amazing. So I can't wait to see it. So very cool. Which would you pick, Scrooge or the Grinch?
Scrooge.
Okay, good.
For sure.
Okay. Do you prefer
Scrooge McDuck, really, if I had to isolate which version?
Okay. Clear lights or colored?
Color, but one color.
Oh, okay, good. Okay. Snowball fight or snowman? Making snowman.
Ooh. I'm not a good thrower, so snowmen.
Okay, good. would you describe yourself as a good gift wrapper or not?
Yes. I take it very seriously. Okay, good corners.
Yeah. Yep. Corners. Okay, last question. What is your ugliest Christmas sweater? Or holiday sweater, excuse me.
Let me think. Do I have anything that hideous? I need to load up. I've got some that are like kind of just like the basic knit, but I don't have any that have like the full, I want something that has like just like a full wacky like snowman's face or Rudolph. I want the full thing. So I might have to load up this year.
Okay, good. All right. Well, good. So you passed the test, the holiday questions.
Oh, good.
Very good.
So, what's my score? I didn't know. I didn't know. Okay.
Yeah, you passed. So very good. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast. This was a lot of fun. I got to get out my survivor angst, and we got to talk about a lot of fun stuff. So I really appreciate it. And where can people?
No, thank you so much for having me.
Where can people follow you on social media or all that fun stuff?
All of them. Mostly I'm on the gram. I have Twitter. I don't really use it. And it's S_Hermy, H-E-R-M-Y.
Okay, great. I will put all that in the description section so people can follow. And if you want to follow me, you can follow me at Rachel's Reviews, all of our social media, iTunes, and on Rotten Tomatoes. So check that out. And if you please follow the podcast, The Hallmarkies Pod, all over social media and on iTunes and YouTube. If you're listening on iTunes, please give us your ratings and reviews. We really appreciate it. And if you're listening on YouTube, please give us your thumbs up, subscribe to the channel. We would really appreciate that too. And consider becoming a patron. We have these fun interviews. We really, really enjoy our patrons. So take a look. The information for that is in the description section. So thanks so much, Samantha. This was really fun. I really appreciate you coming on.
Thank you. You're so pro with your finale. Okay. Thank you very much. Have a good rest of your day.
You too. Okay. Bye. Bye.